It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. According to the Labor Department, nearly 200,000 jobs were added in Pennsylvania last month. Nationwide, 2.5 million. But that's just a small portion of the 20 million that were lost earlier in the pandemic. But is it a hint of recovery? Gus Fauché is the chief economist at PNC Financial Services Group. Gus, so is that a sign we're coming out of the recession a bit, either nationally or regionally?
Yes, the U.S. economy fell into recession in February, according to the National Bureau of Economic Research, but it looks like economic activity started to turn around in May. We saw national job growth of 2.5 million jobs. We added jobs in Pennsylvania. Consumer spending picked up. So the economy is doing a little bit better, but it's still we still experienced a very significant contraction, and the overall level of economic activity is still much, much lower than it was earlier in the year before the pandemic hit.
Most of the region has been in the green phase of the state's reopening plan for about 3.5 weeks. What gives you hope, and conversely, what causes you to pause?
Well, certainly we are seeing a pickup in economic activity. So it looks like businesses are in the Pittsburgh area are reopening. Consumers feel more comfortable going out. We're seeing more traffic on the roads, all of that. So certainly that's a positive. The bigger concern, however, is that we're still down significantly from earlier in the year. So still have a lot fewer jobs. Restaurants may be open, but only at 50% capacity. Fewer consumers are going out. Even if they're allowed to go out, they may not want to. So we're doing a little bit better in southwestern Pennsylvania, but it's still apparent that we're not anywhere close to where we were at the beginning of 2020.
Doing a little bit better, comparing southwestern Pennsylvania to southwestern Pennsylvania, a month or two before, or how do you compare it nationally or even statewide, would you say?
So I think certainly we're doing a little bit better in southwestern Pennsylvania than we were earlier in the year. In terms of the rest of the United States, we did see a little bit of a steeper contraction in southwestern Pennsylvania, but I think that's because things here shut down a little bit earlier than in the rest of the country. So we had a pretty severe, in terms of the rules that in the state of Pennsylvania and in southwestern Pennsylvania, I think the shutdown was more significant here. So that meant a steeper contraction in economic activity, and it occurred sooner here than it did in much of the country. But what that does mean, hopefully, is that as we've moved from red to yellow to green, that we will see a pretty substantial pickup. And the good news, obviously, is that it appears that cases here are much the caseload here is much smaller than it is in other parts of the country, and hopefully that will allow for a gradual resumption of economic activity in the Pittsburgh area.
What have you determined the way people are doing their banking or meeting their banking needs? Are they doing it more from a distance? Have you noticed that? And do you expect that to continue, if so?
Yeah, and what I'm about to say applies to the banking system overall and not necessarily the PNC specifically, but we have seen that people are using branches less often. The other thing is that people have a lot more cash in the bank now than they did a couple of months ago. That's for a few reasons. The first reason is that people received these stimulus checks and they deposited those in the bank, or if they're unemployed, they got extra unemployment insurance payments, and so that's boosted consumer incomes. At the same time, there is less opportunity to spend. So people can't go out to restaurants or don't want to go out to restaurants. They may not be going on vacation. So what we have seen, and this is a phenomenon that's taken place across the banking system and across the economy, is that people are putting more money in the bank right now just because of both income transfers, but also just a reduced ability to spend.
So it's interesting. So saving has increased, but the spending has decreased, and a lot of our retailers would really like to see some of that spending increasing.
That's right, and that was part of the purpose of those stimulus programs, was to make sure that consumers actually had the cash to spend. And they do have the cash to spend. We actually saw household income rise sharply from March to April, even though people lost jobs and weren't getting as much money from the labor market. They were getting money from these stimulus payments. The problem is that they're unable to spend it or they're unwilling to spend it. And so the savings has gone up. And ultimately, that's how we're going to come out of this recession, is by consumers going out and being willing to spend more. That's going to take a sense of security. We need to get control of the virus so that people feel comfortable going out purchasing, and also a sense of security in the economy that people feel they aren't about to lose their job, that their job will be there in a month or two, and so they're willing to go out and spend. So certainly businesses would like consumers to be going out and spending more, but that requires a greater sense that the virus is under containment and that we've seen the worst in the economy.
And of course, the recovery depends on whether there's a second wave of COVID. Yes?
That's right. And certainly we don't have a sense of what that exactly is going to involve. We do see cases rising in many parts of the country right now. And so certainly that is a concern. Again, the caseload here in southwestern Pennsylvania has been relatively light compared to what we've seen nationally. But certainly, if we see a wave here, if the virus continues to spread throughout the country, that's going to weigh on national economic growth. And again, it's not just the shutdowns, but it's the willingness of consumers to go out and spend. And then also it can have impacts on business investment. If businesses think that the virus isn't going away and that demand is going to be lower, that's going to weigh on their investment, and that's another drag on economic growth. So I think the most important thing is to get the public health aspect of this done correctly, and that will give consumers the confidence to go out and spend. It will give businesses the confidence to go out and invest.
Gus Fauché is the chief economist of PNC Financial Services. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
It's the Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Last week, the YWCA Greater Pittsburgh announced it was selling its headquarters building in downtown Pittsburgh. The decision comes during a pandemic and just 4 months after Angela Reynolds became the organization's new CEO. Angela, the sale of the building, is it related to the pandemic? Working remotely, did you realize the facility might not be needed? What?
Actually, the sale of the building is part of our larger strategic plan, getting firmer into our mission of eliminating racism and continuing with empowering women. As part of that assessment, we also looked at the space to see what would be best as we serve our community moving forward. We also have our early learning center and some staff that work out of our Homewood Brushton location. We are retaining that space and in the process of looking for our future home.
You mentioned the Homewood facility is remaining open, but will this sale affect your services?
The sale will not affect our services. We have been very fortunate to be able to have a really nice facility that is in Homewood Brushton, where not only is our early learning center located there, we also have our youth and teen program operating out of that site. We have a satellite office over there for our resource center that helps with basic needs such as housing, transportation, food. Our administrative offices and our Center for Race and Gender Equity are currently at our downtown location.
When you were named CEO, the announcement said the YWCA wanted to return to its core mission, a focus on race and gender equity. Had the organization strayed a bit from that?
The organization was addressing issues of gender disparities and racial disparities. Where we're moving now is more deeply into what are those strategies and systems change and advocacy efforts that need to be put in place to eliminate racism, and also to look at that intersection between race and gender. We are in a position now, because of this current movement, to actually affect real change. I'm grateful that YWCA Greater Pittsburgh will be represented on City of Pittsburgh's Mayor's Task Force on Policing Reform.
Yes, and we actually talked to the co-chair of that task force just recently, Valerie McDonald Roberts. Angela, can you give us an idea, an example of something concrete that you would like to change that could be implemented?
Yes. One of the issues that we're working on right now is as it relates to criminalization of Black and brown girls, and particularly the school to prison pipeline. We're currently also partnering with Gwen's Girls in their effort to really see how can we affect change so that when we consider disciplinary actions that are taken in schools, how can we make sure that those disciplinary actions are appropriate for the behavior, but also place women and girls in a position of achieving and being able to advance as opposed to a punitive system that is not going to benefit over the longer term.
You began your job in late February, just before the pandemic hit our region. How did that affect what your clients needed immediately and how your organization responded?
One of the things that I think is important to notice is that we looked at our data and those who we were serving prior, and so I would say the months of January, February, and then looking at March through April data, and the numbers had pretty much doubled in terms of people who are reaching out for basic needs support, food. And when I say that the numbers doubled, we also looked at the data from a racial perspective. And what we were finding is that African Americans were the predominant population we were serving. And so when we look at households who are living paycheck to paycheck, minority populations were already challenged, and that didn't go away, and it didn't start because of coronavirus. What was really helpful during that time is that we were able to look at our resources, look at what we had available, and so now we have an emergency food pantry, which we did not have at our downtown location, and it is mobile, and it will be able to go with us wherever we go in terms of our next location. We looked at our early learning center, where we have many families who are receiving support to help them in terms of paying for childcare. We know that this is critical for people to be able to work and to advance in their careers. We also were able to take our application process and put it online, and we instituted not only virtual service for our clients, but also being able to look at ways that we could mobily address those who were not able to use public transportation or were scared to leave their homes.
The YWCA Greater Pittsburgh has been around for more than 150 years. What are your long-range hopes for it as part of this community?
We will continue to empower women, actually building up that next generation of women. When I talk about our early learning center, we have children starting at 6 weeks old. When I look at the long-term YWCA framework, how can we start at 6 weeks and interact with children when they're in those middle school years, as we do in our youth and teen programs, supporting them as they're going through post-secondary education or going into work or going into a trade field, and then also being able to make sure that families are stable. So when I talk in terms of addressing racial and gender inequities, I'm not just looking at that individual, but understanding that the individual is in a larger context of a community. So when I look at YWCA Greater Pittsburgh and long-term strategy and building upon the really strong legacy of an over 150-year-old organization, it's how do we continue to improve our region so that it is a place of opportunity, a place where people feel welcome and included, but also where their voices are represented at the table. I think it's important for us to make sure that we honor lived experiences and that those lived experiences have a voice and can affect a change.
Angela Reynolds is the CEO of the YWCA Greater Pittsburgh. Angela, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I've really enjoyed being on the Confluence.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pittsburgh's shops, restaurants, and even museums and movie theaters are reopening to visitors as coronavirus restrictions ease. But live music venues are having a harder time. As 90.5 WESA's Bill O'Driscoll reports, they're banding together nationally to seek federal aid.
Remember March? Almost overnight, state officials shut down non-essential businesses and prohibited large gatherings. Music venues and other performing arts facilities went dark. Many thought the pandemic might pass fairly quickly.
We were hoping, you know, ideally that this would kind of blow over by August.
Adam Valen is marketing manager for Drusky Entertainment, one of Pittsburgh's biggest music promoters. Such optimism was short-lived, he says.
But clearly, as this becomes more and more of a public health crisis and this isn't going away anytime soon.
Music venues specialize in packing people into enclosed spaces, exactly what you don't want during a pandemic. Bands canceled national and international tours. Clubs sold no tickets, and no food or adult beverages either. Alex Neal is general manager of Thunderbird Cafe and Music Hall in Lawrenceville.
We absolutely do not have any revenue at all.
More recently, clubs and halls in the region were permitted to reopen at half capacity with distancing requirements for groups of up to 250. But most venues say that's not viable. Ticket sales must cover promoters' expenses and venues' costs, as well as artists' fees. Those costs remain whether 500 people come through the door or 50. Again, Alex Neal.
It's not as simple as if we open at half capacity, we can pay the artists half of what they cost. Doesn't really work that way.
Concerts have returned with restrictions in place to a few indoor and outdoor venues. But when in-person concerts will resume on a wide scale is anyone's guess. Some say next summer or even later. Meanwhile, short-term federal assistance programs are running out. Liz Berlin is co-owner of Mr. Smalls in Millvale.
Our mortgages aren't going away. Our utilities aren't going away. And we have no idea when any money is going to come in at all. So
most forms of popular music, from jazz to punk and hip-hop, were nurtured by indie venues and promoters. And because few acts start out playing hockey arenas, many important individual artists were launched that way, too. As the pandemic began, venues and promoters joined to form the National Independent Venue Association, or NIVA. The group says it now has about 2,000 members across the country, and 90% of them, according to a survey, say they'll have to close for good if the shutdown lasts 6 months with no additional federal support. Advocates say it's crucial to understand the indie music industry as a network, with artists and promoters as important as brick-and-mortar bars, clubs, and theaters. Allison Harnden is nighttime economy manager for the city of Pittsburgh.
It's all part of the bigger ecosystem, and they all help support each other, but they don't have as ready access to some of the financial relief, and they may not be technically a nonprofit or anything like that to have the funding sources come to them.
Unlike some other businesses, venues and promoters aren't asking for a speedier reopening. Instead, NIVA is advocating in Washington for legislation like the Restart Act, which would provide 6 months' worth of mostly forgivable financing to smaller businesses, including indie venues and promoters. Spending rules would be more flexible than with coronavirus relief programs that focus on retaining full-time employees and would recognize the industry's heavy reliance on part-time workers, from sound techs to bartenders. Lauren Gashinsky is a curator and promoter based in Pittsburgh who works internationally. She says initiatives like Restart would align the U.S. with European countries that recognize the importance of night spots not as simply businesses, but also as vital cultural spaces. In Europe, she says,
nighttime economies and live events are understood as culture with a capital C and not, just like beer sales.
Valen of promoter Drusky Entertainment said that, ironically, the pandemic has created an opportunity for the industry.
Now we have a collective voice. So that's truly been, the silver lining in all this.
NIVA is asking music fans to write Congress to support the Restart Act. The initiative is called Save Our Stages. I'm Bill O'Driscoll, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Joey Zenkovich, and Doug Shugerts. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Hope you have a good day of good news.